Herzlich willkommen bei Hoffnung ist keine Strategie, dem Podcast für Strategiemacherinnen. Mein Name ist Christian Underwood und im Gespräch mit echten Strategiemacherinnen von der Unternehmensfront wollen wir den Mythos Strategie entzaubern und aufzeigen, wie ihr mit strategischer Arbeit in diesen volatilen Zeiten gewinnen könnt. Und heute gibt es eine ganz besondere Folge, nämlich mit Steffen Bersch, CEO der SSI Schäfer Gruppe. Und ja, das ist schon der zweite Podcast mit Steffen Bersch, diesmal aber ein Live-Podcast von unserem WAU Strategy Summit, aufgezeichnet am 17. Mai in Düsseldorf. Und ja, nach unserer letzten Folge ist natürlich schon viel passiert. Knapp anderthalb Jahre sind das her, aus dem Januar 2022. Und die Folge ist auch auf Englisch aufgezeichnet, denn der Strategy Summit fand ja auch statt zu unserer englischen Buchveröffentlichung. Und deshalb findet ihr den Podcast ebenso in unserem rein englischsprachigen Channel auf Hope is not a Strategy, aber den wollten wir euch nicht vorenthalten und deshalb auch hier auf Hoffnung ist keine Strategie. Jetzt Steffen Bersch.
So, welcome back everybody with our last guest of today. And let me first welcome you, Steffen, here at our Strategy Summit 23 at WHU in Düsseldorf. And we do now a fireside chat. What does that mean? It's an interview in the end, but sounds a little bit cooler. And at WHU, we like things to sound a little bit cool. So, that's why you see this little crazy microphone here over there with Steffen and on my side. We do a live podcast, and this is our second podcast that we do. We've done it once, and you're still number one on our download list. So, hopefully we can create a second number one hit here. So, Steffen, I briefly introduce you to the crowd here. You worked for the machine manufacturer GEA Group for about, let's say, 20 years in various leadership positions and the last 4 years as member of the group's executive board. And for a good now 3.5 years, I think, you're the CEO of the SSE Schäfer Group and, yeah, responsible for the fate of the entire group worldwide. And just for those who don't know SSE Schäfer, but for me, typically when I talk to clients and others and raise the name SSE, everyone knows SSE because of the yellow boxes, I think, Ken.
That's the main thing.
So SSE Schäfer Group is the world's leading supplier of products and systems for internal material flow, so-called intralogistics. And the group is headquartered in Neukirchen. That employs around 10,000 people in around 70 operating companies and at 7 production sites worldwide. Founded in 1937, the family-owned company is now a true global player and one of Germany's hidden champions. Steffen, welcome today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, now I would like to conclude our day with you looking holistically at your strategy journey as SSE Schäfer. So, I think on all topics that we've touched today, we will find something that your company is related to or you're dealing with. We started the day with artificial intelligence. I'm sure you're doing something crazy stuff in your company. And we're talking about innovation ecosystems. I think there are a lot of interesting things also going on at your company. The use of digital strategy tools and strategy work. And also the topic of sustainability. And as I noticed in ahead of our talk today and setting it up, information security, because in all of that digital stuff, that's a total important thing, especially when you're hit. And maybe we took that as the last part of our conversation with some real experience from your side. What does that mean for a company? So let's get started with the status quo and the environment and trends intralogistic is facing. So it's a very dynamic environment, I think. And since you've started, Corona hit the company, I think, already when you kicked in there. We have the Ukraine war, we have high material and energy costs hit your customers. So what do you see as the biggest challenges in intralogistics and for your company?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you very much for having the opportunity to talk about SSI Schäfer and particularly the intralogistics market, which is, of course, our main market in which we are working. The interlogistics market is the material flow that is basically handled in all kinds of verticals, maybe in the food retail chain, maybe normal retail, groceries, pharmacies, online pharmacies, for example, the food and beverage industry. And we do basically that stuff that is the automatic part of it. That means wherever you try to reduce personnel costs and try to automize the entire process. So that's a typical thing we are doing from taking over an empty building or even building it ourselves and then fitting it with the hardware, the automation hardware, as well as the software to operate the whole site. So what is the basic trend? I think what we all have experienced, particularly in the time of Corona, is that more and more of the business is going away from the traditional stationary retail chain into the online channels. I think we all experience our own habits in Amazon, Zalando, and the likes. And of course, that is our core business. That means those are our core customers and all the variants of those customers, if I may call it like that. That entire market is growing, particularly by the shift from stationary dealing to online dealing, and is growing overall by around 10 to 13% on an annual basis, depending on which view you take and depending on how you slice the market accordingly. So that is basically driving us at this point in time. And the main driver within that market is the automation, and this is software. That means reduce personal expenses for our clients, or even optimize it because they don't find personnel anymore in order to operate their sites and to transform also their business. So that's basically driving it. And we're dealing with all the challenges around that.
Yeah. Thank you very much for giving that overview. And when it comes now to Corona and also the war, how did this crisis affect your strategy that you set up before, and how you deal with your team?
You indicated already the cyber attack that we had basically on April 14th. Just some 30 days ago, or some 1 month ago. I have to say that since I left GEA actually and joined SSI Schaefer, I never had a quarter without a crisis. That was an interesting experience. So starting basically with Corona, I think that was in my second week when we were facing the situation that we didn't know, like factories that were shut down in Malaysia and Asia, for example, and didn't get the people basically back to work and all the stuff. You all have experienced that. Then we had the supply chain crisis that started, I think, with the Ever Given event in the Suez Channel, and then with the bullwhip effect and other effects on how to get chips, how to get drive systems, how to get electric motors and all kind of automation equipment. Those waves, and then the last thing was basically now the cyber attack. In so far, let's say implementing or developing a strategy, try to run on a normal train track, basically implementing it, but being continuously stopped with, let's say, ad hoc events, was a special challenge in those times. Nevertheless, we are still following the strategy that we have defined and the procedures that we have defined basically at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, and try to execute that.
Okay, let me talk about a little bit about your technology leadership. So I remember supporting you and your team a little bit on that journey. In your strategy, you have defined technology leadership and intralogistics as your core, and identified several levers to achieve this. To name just two, sustainability was one of them, and another one was the innovative capability, including automation. So let's talk about innovation, how you deal with that. So let's start with that topic. You're currently building your innovation ecosystem, and what do you see as a key building block and success factor in that field?
Yeah, probably before coming to that innovation part, I just want to put it a bit into perspective. Sure. on what we tried to achieve there. So we were coming first from a perspective on how to orchestrate strategy in the organization, and we didn't want to have something like where the executive board is sitting together defining something and putting it later into the shelf and nobody knows on what's going on. We basically tried to first build up a team, which in our case consists of the regional heads and regional teams. That means we have 6 regions in which we are operating, 4 business units, certain group functions, as well as our plants and the entire supply chain. And we added a group of younger people, basically, that should build the bridges between the organization and us there in that group. So that was the initial point. And there was a lot of analysis first taking place on what are the general trends that we do see in the market, which are the areas we want to focus, which are the areas we don't want to focus on. There was a lot of discussion on we called it the own realities. You remember that part of the discussion? Being a family-owned business, we have a lot of, legacy topics that we need to deal with, investments that haven't been made, certain focus areas that haven't been really focused on, integration that didn't took place in the organization and all that stuff. And at the end of that process, we were coming first with that normal statements of vision, the mission, and our group strategy statement, the own realities were defined. And then we were coming to 6 priorities, basically. At that time, when you defined with us together the strategy frame, it were 5. We adopted that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And first of all, we said we put our people into the center. We put our customers into the center, the 2 priorities. We said we want to grow in terms of volume according to the market or a bit faster. We want to have a profitable growth. I think that was also part of the last discussion, profitable growth. And then we said we need to put innovation and technology leadership into a priority. And last but not least, the sustainability aspect. And then try to define based on those key priorities for each region, for each business unit, for each plant, for the entire supply chain, and for the group functions, like what does that mean for them? And then try to develop tactical measures behind that. And one element was the innovation part.
Mm-hmm.
So that means every unit, group functions, regions, business units, need to define what does innovation mean for them. So, but you it doesn't help if you just give that as a central statement. It needs to be tangible so that people in the organization kind of understand what you mean there. And there we established then, let's say, a group technology group and said those guys basically coordinate all the activities that are happening in the different units, in regions, and in the business units. It was basically supported by the idea that we want to go more into partnership approach. The history of the whole thing was in the past that the organization said we want to do everything ourselves and we don't want to share and we don't want to basically discuss with others, a kind of typical German approach. And we said, let's try to come from a kind of an ecosystem thing. But developing an organization from that end to the other end is also a cultural topic, which needs some time and still needs some time. So for us, it meant we started technology partnerships with certain research institutes. We cooperated more with other players in the market, other, let's say, technology players in the market, and tried to develop ideas around that. Is that something where I can say you start there and like in 3 years later, you have the ultimate success? Probably no. It's more of an try to generate momentum in the organization and try to do something with, let's say, try to motivate them always to think a step ahead in terms of technology.
Okay. And I've also read that you have established a data science team
focusing on artificial intelligence.
Now, first of all, we had no data science team. So, and we were of the opinion that when you are a provider of warehouse management software, where you have all kind of data of the customer process available. That means what is ordered in a logistics center, what is packed together, in which combinations, how many people do you need for that, which technology is involved, and how much you basically send out, then you have a lot of stuff available, a lot of data available. And we said probably we should make benefit out of that and establish now that team, which is producing like a half year ago, in order to, let's say, first of all, generate ideas. What can we do with it? And can we probably generate other business models or leverage a little bit on the input that we have from that that team.
Okay, that's one part. And you mentioned automation. That's really key for your business. So you acquired, I think now 100% of DS Automation, a leading provider of mobile robotics. So that's the thing that your customers did not find anymore any workforce, and that now you're going the road also in robotics.
No, I mean, it has always been a topic. That means we always purchased robotic components either from KUKA or other players in the market and integrated them into our solutions. Of course, you wouldn't buy KUKA. Probably it's that doesn't make so much sense for us. However, there are other, let's say, interesting robotic solutions that are of relevance for us. One important element, I think, for the whole logistic or interlogistic industry is the AGV market or AMR market. That means all kind of mobile robots. That means how do you replace a traditional conveying technology by mobile robots, for example. It's a big trend in China. Chinese players are at the forefront with applications around that, probably a market where we cannot catch up. However, for certain industrial applications, certain niche applications, I believe there's still opportunity, and we want to leverage on that opportunity. We had a 40% share on an Austrian-based company called DS Automotion. We increased that to 100% now, took the company entirely over, and developed together with those guys an innovation and investment plan on what can we basically develop in terms of new technologies, new applications around that technology base of DS Automotion. It also, if I may also, because it's not on your piece of paper, yeah. So when you talk automation, or let's say when you talk logistics centers, that we all see those logistics centers around the highway, along the highway, which are to a very large extent manual operations, to a very large extent. Mm-hmm. And we are totally in this automation part. That means with these software and automation solutions. Important elements in that are picking solutions, case and piece picking solutions. That means how can you replace a normal place where like containers are there, somebody's putting it, let's say taking something out into another box for shipment. And that is a process that needs to be automized, but it's very difficult to automize because if you do that on the pharmaceutical side, it's easy. You have small boxes basically to a certain weight of like maximum 1 kilogram. So that is easy. When you talk on an Amazon logistics center with all kind of stuff, then it's becoming, let's say, very complex. And we are working with technical solutions also on that one. We have acquired another company called Robert, which is doing case picking solutions. So we have automized, for example, for IKEA, and I can talk about that because we have published that already. We have automized the commissioning of kitchen, online ordered kitchens, as well as those packs, Schränke.
We all know that.
You all know that. So if you order that online, then it's automatically commissioned. So it's not a manual process anymore. And that's a case picking solution or flat pack picking solution. And we try to do those kind of things in our innovation stream.
Okay, so we're now talking about so much about technology and data of clients. And you mentioned the security thing that happens. Can you give us some insight? What happened and how did that affect you?
Yeah, it's probably something you don't want to have, but you can't prevent that. That's also what we basically learned now. We thought that we are safe. That means we have done continuous penetration tests in the whole organization. We had all kinds of providers in the background checking ourselves, try to penetrate the system, try to send phishing emails into the organization in order to check who is opening it, who is not opening it, so to have some ideas on what's going to happen. And basically, in the mid of April, we have gotten information from our security operations center that there is something happening in our network. And then we had to do a judgment call to either proceed operating to keep the whole thing switched on or to basically take the company entirely from the internet. That means 70 operating companies, including production, supply chain, and so on, entirely from the internet. And we decided at the end to do so. before we get encrypted. We believe still that that decision was right. We have never been encrypted. We have never got any kind of blackmailing, so nobody came to us. We scanned the entire darknet for if we find something. We didn't find anything. We had certain indications on certain data that might have left the organization. Nevertheless, company is shut down, or has been shut down at that point in time, and it has now accelerated our ideas on changing the IT infrastructure. So the plans were already, and it has really accelerated the speed now on doing it new. However, I don't wish it to anyone that this is going to happen, because it's pain for the whole organization, because the entire legacy of like 30, 40 years of IT that have been built up become visible. And you don't want to have that.
Absolutely. And I noticed it because I wrote 2 emails to you and you.
And they didn't arrive, right? But it was a cool time, I have to say. Like 30 days without email, I found it pretty cool, I have to say, from that perspective. Of course, we operated the entire company on Teams and WhatsApp. At least the communication, not the whole company, at least the communication. So we were continuously in contact. We had the crisis team. We had a very cool support from the authorities, may it be the BSI or the public prosecution supporting us, the police. And so far, it was an interesting experience. Nevertheless, you don't want to have it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we talk about technology and now using digital tools and system to do your strategy, so, and yeah, you think, okay, now we're going off the internet. How you operate also, not on an operational level and still survive every day, but how you still develop your company, because it took you now 1 month.
Of course, the priority is a bit different now. That means first you need to get the blood pressure back into the organization. That means the company needs to operate. That means strategy execution or strategy development has not the highest focus at this point in time. However, we proceed with our strategy work also before the attack happened. We have basically renewed already elements of that strategy or adopted certain things. So, and of course, what is still valid is we have at the time when we developed it in 21, given the tactical measures according to the priorities and the different units to the organization, and they proceed working on it. Of course, at this point in time, a bit slower because they all basically want to read their mails first.
Okay, but your organization, you would say you're still on track with your strategy to work?
And so no, there were certain elements. I mean, major parts. I would say 70% are on track. 30% I would say are not on track, and those were certain regional developments that we had in mind, particularly in China. At the time when we developed it in 2020, 2021, we were about like having the idea of acquiring software companies in China, and then figured out that the reality of such an acquisition is a bit, like we thought a bit too progressive on that. So we at the end had to experience that we had to stop those things. Of course, the major parts of the development in Europe, as well as in North or Latin America, are executed.
Okay, great. And yeah, coming to another lever or priority, as you call it, sustainability. We had it on the panel here today, and we also have a nice podcast episode with your global head of social responsibility, Heiko Schürzel, number 26, who wants to listen. Is the topic of sustainability also a performance driver for you today or in the future?
I got that basically what you had in the last discussion, and I believe yes. However, I think we also need to be a little bit aware of the topic that the regulatory element of it, particularly in Western Europe, and I would support what has been said in the last session, is probably limiting a little bit the competitiveness of European companies in comparison to countries where sustainability is not as high on the agenda, at least from a regulatory perspective. For us, it has two elements. It's the internal part in the organization, which I could summarize under from an environmental perspective, how to reduce the CO2 footprint of all the operation. I think that is also what, let's say, a lot of us are doing. So that's not a Schaefer-specific topic. We all have to work on that. And the other topic is we have to support our customers on making their operations more sustainable, which means at the end, when we're building a logistics center, we have to think the whole thing from a customer perspective through. So how can we build an operation that is CO2 neutral, or at least CO2 neutral? What can we do in terms of recuperation of energy? How can we, for example, which is a major topic currently, replace compressed air by electronic drive systems in order to reduce energy consumption, those kind of things. This is the element of it which in the strategy has been defined and is rolled out as a tactical measure into the business units where the development is taking place, and they are developing their ideas now on doing something. Is that always to our full satisfaction? Probably not. Is it always, let's say, tangible in our pockets in terms of money that we're earning? Probably also not, but it has to be done.
And looking to your clients, are they looking for sustainable solutions?
I think that is normal, because same as we are under pressure when we build our site, all our customers that build their sites are also under the same pressure. And there, a competitive advantage might be if we come with technological or process solutions that not only from a price per pick perspective or total operating cost perspective is attractive, but also from a sustainability perspective in terms of CO2 footprint or energy consumed and so on is attractive. So we try to embed that in our offers.
Okay.
To an extent, we can handle it.
Okay, that's right. Just coming back to the big picture of strategy at your company. So if you have 3 wishes down the road, what would you wish for your company to happen in the outside or maybe inside? Or what would you wish in making better decisions?
So first of all, after Corona, the supply chain topic, and now the cyber crisis, we discussed recently on what can happen next. And we thought probably an alien attack would be the thing that could happen. So if I have a wish, that should not happen. But all our wishes so far have not been heard. So. And let's see then how we will deal with that one. No, I mean, the engineering business is dealing with, let's say, is operating in a very volatile world, I have to say. So the big investments that are done out there are rare. And a lot of companies are fighting for those rare investments. And that is fine. That's a normal competition. But the effects that we see in the market since basically 1 or 2 years, where interest rates are going up, where investment decisions are delayed or postponed, where political frame conditions are probably difficult in certain markets, are things that are really limiting us as an organization, because the planning for us is very difficult. So we need to, let's say, if I would have a wish, I would always say, how do I get the volatility out of that market and balance it more out into a stable market? So my biggest wish would always be, and I said that already in the times at GEA, if customers would budget with us over a period of 10 years in advance, then it would really help, right? It's probably not going to happen.
Not really. Yeah, but thank you for that. And, you know, finally, our listeners always want to have some concrete advice. And we have now this hot topic on artificial intelligence. So that's how we started the day. And what would you give as a current advice to companies or leaders of corporates that if they want to open up this topic for their business?
I have no clue, I have to say. I can't answer that because I believe that a lot of the stuff that is today labeled as artificial intelligence is not artificial intelligence. It's a normal control loop stuff that has been done since 30 years or longer. When I see those things like ChatGPT, I also believe that that is not really artificial intelligence. It's just like, I mean, there are elements in it that are very interesting. Mm-hmm. But let's say at the end, like deep learning things where a machine is learning by itself, there the fun part would start. And I think the only advice that I could give, and that's also the stuff we discussed internally, is let's give groups in the organization the chance to work on this. That means try to cooperate with research institutes, try to cooperate with other companies, try to define platforms. Not everything has to be invented by one company. Companies need to join forces. You know, I'm also supporting the VDMA, German Machine Building Association, to a large extent, where we also try to certain platforms that the entire industry is joining forces. And those platforms, I think that's the only advice I can give, should be used and should be supported more by organizations in order to, at the end, leverage on new technologies that are out there.
Steffen, thank you very much for your insights today.
Werbung. Am 16. Mai ist es wieder soweit. Unser Strategy Summit findet statt. Die Strategiekonferenz für echte Strategiemacherinnen im deutschsprachigen Raum. Dafür haben wir wirklich ein tolles Programm zusammengeschraubt mit echten Strategiemacherinnen von der Front, die euch zeigen werden, wie ihr Strategie digital noch einfach besser machen könnt. Dafür haben wir unter anderem Speaker wie Mark Pollock, CEO der Trenkwalder Gruppe, und Rüdiger Rath, CEO der Cancom Gruppe, mit am Start in Düsseldorf bei Infosys im Tech and Innovation Center. Was müsst ihr jetzt noch tun? Geht auf unsere Seite, findet ihr auch in den Shownotes, www.strategy-summit.de, und sichert euch jetzt euer Ticket mit dem Gutscheincode COMMUNITY10. Community, alles groß geschrieben, und 10 als Ziffer. Wir freuen uns auf euch. Wir sehen uns in Düsseldorf. Ende der Werbung.